tonight on the Daily Debrief.
The only way you can stop me is put a bullet in my head.
That's just one thing this defendant said during disturbing interrogations where he admits killing his five kids.
The children were afraid. He mentioned both of them struggled.
Now he's charged with murder.
He would be from one extreme to the other.
Is it evidence of guilt or insanity? Also, charges against three people accused of cutting a baby from a womb. And Chelsea Manning is back behind bars over WikiLeaks. Plus, a look ahead to the upcoming case of an alleged tight end tyrant facing rape charges in California. Real-life cases are happening nationwide. This is the Daily Debrief for Friday, May 17th.
And good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Debrief. I'm Aaron Keller. Mike Korobanek's along with me tonight. We're beginning tonight with that death penalty case out of South Carolina involving five dead children. Timothy Jones Jr. admits to killing his kids ages 1 through 8 and then driving around with their bodies in the back of his SUV for more than a week. Authorities say he strangled four of the kids and beat another one to death. Jones is arguing insanity. A jury of 10 women and 8 men is hearing the case. 6 will eventually learn they are only alternates. Jurors today heard the defendant's version of how his five children died. The FBI says most of the kids knew they would suffer, and they were scared.
Just tell us the order.
The defendant wept in court as the jury heard how Jones said he killed his son, Natan, because 4 power outlets in the house had blown out.
He said to get his son to talk about this, he began PTing his ass.
Those were his words?
Those were his words.
That meant military-style physical training, but it also meant hitting and spanking Natan for hours.
He claimed he knew that he had pushed his son too far, and when he checked on his child, his son was no longer breathing.
Natan died. He was 6.
He repeatedly said it was not premeditated, that this was an accident with Natan.
Jones told the FBI that the voices in his head told him he was going to have to kill the rest of his children because no one would believe Natan died innocently. He started with the oldest boy, Elias, age 7.
He used his hands to strangle his child.
His final words?
According to Timothy Jones, Elias says, "Daddy, can I come with?" He chokes his son to death, and his son struggles as he's being strangled.
Then Mara Gracie, age 8, who Jones said he killed the same way.
According to Mr. Jones, Mara Gracie says, before he strangles her, "Daddy, I love you."
She struggles as well. Then Gabriel, age 2, and finally Abigail, age 1. First, Jones said he strangled them with his hands. Then he said his hands were too big, so he had to use a belt.
Placed the belt around their neck, and then he had showed us how he had pulled the belt taut to kill his son.
If a picture is worth 1,000 words, a voice might be worth 10,000 words. Here is the defendant describing these very same acts to the FBI in his own words.
And then you find out what?
I come back and find out that he's deceased. And when I find out he's deceased, then the shit hits the fan and all.
How does the shit hit the fan, Tim?
The voices start going off, and then here comes the paranoia. Oh, shit, what just happened? What just happened? This ain't gonna go. I can't call. I got all these voices running through my head now.
So Natan was dead, and then what happened?
And then I followed suit with the other 4.
And how did you kill
them?
That
was with my hands.
With your hands? Can you describe what you mean by with your hands?
Around their neck.
Around their neck? Okay.
who
was next?
Eli, Mira, Gabriel, Eli.
The interrogator instinctively asked the defendant whether he knew right from wrong. That was long before this officially became an insanity case, but it cuts to the core of the legal standard for sanity in South Carolina.
Did this, did you think your actions could hurt the children?
Yes.
Yes? So you knew that what you were doing to the children was going to...
I knew that what
was going to harm them, protect their lives.
It was to protect myself.
Okay.
I know that sounds fucking pathetic.
Now, when you did this crime, did you know it was wrong?
At the time, I didn't think any of it was wrong. It happened in this... Fuck, I'm happenstancing. Let me finish it up now.
Okay. When you did the crime, did you know it was against the law?
time I didn't think about the law, so I'm going to say no.
Okay.
The law didn't come into my mind. I wasn't caring about the law. I'm dealing with dead children on my hands. Fuck the law. I'm in trouble, man. My kids are dead.
Yeah. Did you think you might get caught?
No, you're fine.
I knew I was going to get caught. I'm not a good criminal. It was a matter of time.
An investigator who interviewed the defendant after his arrest testified that the defendant was all over the place during an earlier interrogation. At times, the defendant blamed his mother.
He and his father began to talk, and I would interject, okay, Tim, we know that you have five children. That's not a question. We've been on the phone with authorities in South Carolina, and they're not with their mother. And your father, their grandfather, wants to know where they're at. Where are these kids? And I'd never, maybe one other time in my career, I can remember someone acting this erratic. But he would be from one extreme to the other, extremely loud and teary and crying and talking about Cindy put this in my head. And we later learned through listening that Cindy was his mother who had had some mental issues in the past based on our understanding. The only way you can stop me is put a bullet in my head. Just crazy, you know, sounding talk, like bouncing off the wall here. He would calm down, he would talk just a minute, and then he would yell over here, and just one extreme to the other, very high, low, up and down emotions.
That same investigator then read from his report about other behavior Jones exhibited during interrogation. Remember, the defendant is pleading insanity.
Began to speak with his father. Jones Jr. was acting in such a manner that I've never seen. He was sweating profusely in a cold room with beads of sweat dripping from his hair. He would scream out that it was Cindy who put these voices in his head and that Cindy passed this on to him. We discovered Cindy was Jones Jr.'s mother who had apparently spent time in a mental institution. Jones continued, she put this poison on my head. Jones Jr. continued, after Amber left me, and we learned later that was the ex-wife, it just came out of me. I couldn't control it. Voices are in my head. Jones Sr. asked Jones Jr. where the kids were. Jones Jr. said the kids were in South Carolina. Jones said, I left the kids for a reason. I will never go back to them. Someone stick a needle in my arm and get me out of it. My mom gave it to me. Jones Jr. stated, I didn't come to see you because of all this stuff in my head. Once again, Jones Sr. asked where the kids are. Jones Jr. said, when I tell you, I'm going to hang myself. Then Jones Jr. indicated an address of 2155B, South Carolina, and said that was where the kids are. He also indicated that if we loaded him in a car, he would take us to them. Jones Jr. continued by saying that he put the kids out of the vehicle on the road between his residence and the Walmart nearby in South Carolina. Jones Jr. said that one of his...
The defense wanted to key the jury into this same investigator's description of the defendant's behavior. This is critical for the insanity defense. Here's the cross-examination.
You described this behavior as something you've never seen before.
One other time, one other case, similar, but this was extreme behavior that Mr. Jones Jr. was exhibiting.
Right, and I think that was your previous testimony. This was really extreme.
It was extreme behavior, yes, sir.
And you've seen people drunk and high before?
I have, Counselor.
You've seen people who were brain damaged before?
I've seen people injured, yes.
You've seen people who are mentally ill before, talk to them?
I have.
You've seen people who are brain damaged, mentally ill, and on drugs.
At points in my career, I'm sure I've run across all of that.
And you don't know if this behavior was one or some combination of all those things.
No, I did not know what it was. I didn't think it was alcohol, and it was more similar, his behavior was more similar to some sort of substance abuse. To me, based on my experience and training, what I had seen, to be clear on what I thought.
Voices in my head. She put voices in my head. The voices in my head came out. That sounds like that's just you. That's just drugs.
Well, I've seen people hallucinate and say things of that nature.
It's psychotic, right?
It would be something along those lines.
It's a from reality.
It sounded like it.
The sheriff who oversaw all of these officers testified that the defendant was also flipping out over a pronunciation issue.
When you were questioning him, at one point, did you ask about one of his sons?
I did.
Whose son was that?
I think he's the middle one. It was kind of odd. I called him. I just mispronounced his name. I thought it was Nathan. And he got very emotional, very angry with me, screamed that that was not his name. His name was Natan. There was just something about that name that that triggered him.
Throughout that interview, did the name of that young child, Natan, come up again and again?
Yes, sir, several times.
What was his reaction every time that name came up?
Well, every time that particular child's name would come up, there was a burst of anger. He just became like a different person when that particular name would come up.
Did you do that with his other kids?
No, sir, he did not.
Signs of criminal conduct there or simply signs of mental health trouble. Consider this as well. A toxicologist testified about the effects of synthetic marijuana. The authorities say that's what the defendant was taking when they caught up with him at a DWI checkpoint. Here is some direct testimony and some cross-examination.
You take one of these drugs, or any illicit drug, for the euphoric effects of the drugs. You want to take a drug because you want to feel good. So one of the primary effects of the drug is that still is euphoria. Some of the side effects of the drug, which are interesting because they differ so much from the traditional marijuana, include agitation, can include...
Can you slow down just a little bit?
Okay.
Agitation?
Confusion. Anxiety. They can include paranoia. They can include hallucinations. And then one of the interesting things that really is specific to some of the later iterations of synthetic cannabinoids, which AB Panaca is a member of, are psychosis or altered mental state. There have been studies in regards to synthetic cannabinoids and their effects on those who already have underlying conditions, such as anxiety, depression, and mental illness. And what those studies show is that synthetic cannabinoids specifically exacerbate those effects when you're already prone to those conditions.
Including persons who have underlying depression or underlying anxiety.
That is correct, yes.
Now, also in this case, a witness who went through the defendant's SUV after the ill-fated traffic stop that netted the arrest came across a list. Some of it's hard to understand, but here are some of the items the defendant wrote down. He said, head to campground, melt bodies, sand bones to dust or small pieces, and then there's a list day by day. Here are the items on that. Day one, burn up bodies. Day two, sand down bones. Day three, dissolve and discard. The rest of the list contains names, a list of bills to be paid over there on the right-hand side. See that? And then also, there were circles with initials. Attorney Mike Korobanix is with me tonight here on The Debrief. Mike, good to see you.
Nice to see you.
Okay, let's make sense of this case now. This guy's all over the place, but is it possible to have some underlying mental health issues but also be legally sane?
I find it to be very contradictory, and I think it's a very, I really don't understand the law in South Carolina where they have that one exception where you could be insane but still guilty. I'm a little surprised, Aaron, and in fact, while we're off camera listening, that they allowed a police officer to testify as to the defense's questions that he was erratic, that he was not making sense, that he didn't understand what was going on, he was in psychosis. I mean, that's not a police officer's lane. He should stay in his lane. And I was a little surprised the prosecution let them go down that road.
Okay, what do you make of some of the key facts here, though? Because he said, this is the defendant said, that when he was committing these crimes, when he was killing his own children, that he wasn't thinking about the law, but that he was not a good criminal and knew he would eventually get caught. Now, that sounds like he knew right from wrong in the moment, despite the claim that the voices in his head are telling him to kill his remaining four kids. That seems to me like that's the clincher for the state.
I think that one sentence really is the clincher for the state. And also later on when he speaks about the voices in his head, I think could argue very strongly are totally manufactured by him too. He was thinking about this. He had days to think about this statement, and he knew what he was doing. He was manipulating.
Wow, that's a pretty harsh statement. Criminal defense attorney, you think this is a strong case for the state, it sounds like.
I think it's an extremely strong case for the state. And, you know, when I was a young prosecutor, someone I respected very much said, there's nothing better to have in your case than the words of the defendant himself. And they have an extended play here with his confession.
They have a lot. Mike Korobanics, we'll check in again with you at the end of the broadcast here. Still ahead tonight on The Debrief. Three people under arrest after police say they killed a woman to harvest her unborn baby. Plus, we're going to bring you back to the case of Horror on the Highway, where a defendant is on trial after driving the wrong way down the interstate and killing five high school friends. We'll take you back to Vermont after the break. Three people are under arrest in Chicago tonight on charges related to the killing of an expecting mother and the cutting of her baby from her womb. The victims were Marlon Ochoa Lopez and her baby. Police say Ochoa Lopez was 9 months pregnant when she picked up baby clothes from her eventual killers. Under arrest are these three for the murder of Clarissa Figueroa. That's the mother who's under arrest. She was the one trying to pass off the baby as her own. Her daughter Desiree also involved. Those two charged with murder. Clarissa's boyfriend is also under arrest for concealing a homicide. His picture on the right. A federal judge has ordered Chelsea Manning back to jail for refusing to cooperate with a grand jury investigating documents released by WikiLeaks. Prosecutors want Manning to testify about her interactions with WikiLeaks and its founder, Julian Assange, who was recently arrested in the UK. Manning has so far refused and already served 60 days in jail for previously refusing to testify. Manning told the court she would rather starve to death than change her position. Manning served in the military, or she served 7 years, rather, in a military prison for leaking army secrets to WikiLeaks. Former President Barack Obama commuted Manning's sentence during his final days in office. We are preparing to cover a major case out of California next week involving a former professional athlete accused of sex crimes. Rachel Stockman has this look ahead.
A former star NFL player now on trial for charges of raping three women and exposing himself to two others. But former Cleveland Browns tight end Kellen Winslow II denies the accusations.
I'm an innocent guy. I'm an innocent man.
Investigators say he raped two women in their 50s in California in 2018. And when that news broke, another woman came forward with accusations that he raped her in 2003 when she was 17 years old. Winslow told detectives he had consensual sex with the two women in 2018. Opening statements are expected Monday. He faces life in prison if convicted. Expect Law and Crime to have live gavel-to-gavel coverage for the whole trial. I'm Rachel Stockman for the Law and Crime Network.
Closing arguments scheduled for Monday in the case of Horror on the Highway. Stephen Burgoyne of Vermont is facing five counts of second-degree murder and a couple of other lesser charges. Authorities believe this is what it probably looked like as Burgoyne sped down the wrong lane of a Vermont interstate highway, swerved to the left, and slammed head-on into a vehicle which was traveling in the correct direction. The occupants of that other car all died at ages 15 and 16, but the defendant survived. He stole a responding police SUV, took off down the highway, did a three-point turn, and then rammed into the wreckage of the first crash at an estimated 103 miles per hour. Testifying yesterday was a doctor who just happened to be an eyewitness at the crash scene. In this dashcam video, you can see the doctor treating the defendant at the scene. The doctor was part of a prosecution rebuttal case. He testified that he does not believe the defendant was in a psychotic episode at the scene.
Medical definition. It means that you become completely split off from reality. You have no understanding whatsoever of where you are in in the world. You have no understanding who you are, and you are completely detached from reality. So psychosis is a clear medical term. It means you're completely separated from reality.
Okay. And based on your education, training, and experience as a physician, at the time that you observed and examined this man on the ground who had been handcuffed, was this man in an acute psychotic episode?
Absolutely not.
Was he out of touch with reality?
Absolutely not.
Was he hallucinating?
He was not hallucinating.
Was he delusional?
He was not delusional.
Was he paranoid?
He was not paranoid.
Any thought disorganization?
There was no thought disorganization, and he cooperated with me to get his blood pressure, examine him, check his head, take his blood pressure, feel his pulse. There was no lack of cooperation during that time.
And back to Mike Korobanix on this case as well. So, Mike, what do you make of this one? This insanity defense is a little more tricky than it is in the Jones case.
This one's very confusing because there's so many intervening kind of activities. You know, you have a car crash. You have right after that, you have him getting into another police car. There's all these things that are going on, and it's very confusing. I mean, that's pretty strong to me to have a doctor on the scene observing him. He's clearly oriented to time, place, and where he is, and he's answering his questions. I think this is rough, but it's a little more confusing than the other case.
You know, you also had this defendant seeking mental health treatment before the crash. He had done so a number of times. So it's like there's something going on there. The question is, you know, how tightly does it wrap around the legal issue here? You know, because you can have mental health treatment and still be legally sane. It's not the same as a medical diagnosis in the DSM.
I agree with you, Aaron. I mean, listen, everybody likes to talk about insanity defenses. Lawyers like to debate about it. But I'm going through my mental index of cases I know about, and I really can't tell you of one as we sit here where it's ever really been a successful defense or where it hasn't. Usually when you find it, the proofs are so strong and there's such agreement that the prosecution will agree that it's an insanity defense and agree to a commitment to some mental hospital or something of that nature. I think they're very tough roads to hoe, and I really think it's sort of like the last stance for a defense attorney.
Okay, it's easier to get a mental health defense in Vermont than it is in South Carolina, though. It's a lower burden. It's a different standard that's a little bit more defendant-friendly, so that might dictate the outcome here. We never know. That case, again, moving into closing arguments on Monday. Mike Korobanix, I want to thank you for joining me here on The Debrief. And, of course, we will be back on Monday here on the Law & Crime Network. Our live trial coverage starts at 9 a.m. The Debrief will be on a little bit early next week because we'll be covering that case out of California. We will see you then, and we will be here late for that case as well. Have a good weekend, folks.